Welcome to the Better Business, Better Life podcast. I'm your host, Stuart Wilkinson. Welcome back. And today's discussion is all around inflation. We know this has been a topic for a good few months now, coming out the back of last year, that inflationary pressures were starting to hit New Zealand and globally. So what does that mean for business owners? How do business owners review their business and take inflation into consideration? We know this has come from a range of different sources, some from the fact of the amount of stimulus that's put into the economy, but also externally outside of our borders with supply chain issues, etc. We recorded this podcast with Greg last Tuesday, and that was before the official cash rate was reviewed on Wednesday, which got moved up to 1%. So we've also got that inflationary traditional tools of interest rates hike happening at the same time. So there's a bit going on from an economic point of view. In no way are me or Greg economists, but we try and decipher this of what this means for business owners and how to take control through times when prices are changing. There's still the supply chain issues, etc. So I hope you enjoy this podcast. If you do, please subscribe to whatever platform you're listening to, and also just check out all of Right Way social media channels to keep up to date with all the latest information from Right Way. Greg, welcome back to the podcast.
Good morning.
Good morning. So today, inflation's the topic conversation, which has been brewing for a while, and we've been sort of discussing that we should be probably doing a discussion about this, particularly since Christmas anyway. And so now we've got round to it, and I think it's a good timing. There's plenty more, obviously, press and results. We had the results from January's quarter that inflation hit 5.9%. So I think we've got some stats to go by this. So today's podcast, me and Greg are going to decipher what this really means for business owners. We'll talk a little bit about what's caused this and things that have impacted this. By the way, me and Greg are not certified economists or anything, so there was a grain of salt here. But I think that what practically does business owners do around about inflation and things that will come out of that, whether it's interest rates and that sort of stuff. So we'll talk a little about that today. I guess, Greg, to start with, like, lay of the land, like, speaking with your customers, what are they, I guess, on the ground, what are they experiencing? Because inflation can be a big term that's got some broad brushstrokes applied to it, but what are people practically experiencing in their businesses from your conversations with them?
Just before I answer that question, I'll give an analogy of inflation, because a lot of people have never experienced it. And I suppose you could say it's a bit like Lord of the Rings, The bad guy's sitting under the mountain for decades and decades, and everyone's having a great time, and then he pops up and creates havoc. Well, that's inflation. As a person, was, I'll call myself Silver here, and gone through the periods when my first mortgage interest rate was 21%, and credit cards were 33%, and you could only get a limit of $500, and we handled a total controlled economy. We've been there before. Hopefully don't go down that far. So coming back to your question, Stu, it depends where I'm seeing my clients in the trade sectors just flabbergasted by the rate increases going up all the time, just continue getting emails, a 10% increase, a 20% increase. They are in a sector, though, at the moment that in the main, their customers are absorbing it. So they are able to pass that on. I know there's a bit of conflict between banks and builders, and that banks are demanding fixed price contracts, and no building company with their right mind would sign that. Then you flip over to hospitality, tourism, and that really is dead man walking. That's not inflation.
No,
that's killed that. So I think the impact of inflation on them could actually be beneficial in the short term, and that it could get money moving, but that's not a long-term solution. And the other sector is that generalist who are concerned but they don't call it inflation. They say, how do I sustain a wage increase? The minimum wage has gone up 6%. So I'm getting under pressure for all my wages go up 6%. I can't push my prices. That's inflation. So don't hear many people talking about inflation per se, but they're definitely talking about the impacts of
it. And I think, you know, there's plenty of ways of describing inflation, but I think the easiest ones to understand is the cost of living increase is increasing. And I think one of the most visible ones we've seen is the petrol prices. You know, there's plenty of reports now where it's nudging that $3 for the 91. And we know that, you know, one, that's obviously means when Joe Bloggs' family, you fill up your car, it's a lot more expensive, but also that means to move stuff around the country, around the world, whatever, that becomes more expensive. I've got experience, Greg, with one of my clients, and they're in the food production industry, and they sell to supermarkets and stuff. Their raw materials have gone up in price. And it's, you know, it's a couple of dollars here, a couple of dollars there. But then you put that together with freight costs increasing to move their goods around because of petrol prices and whatever. Then also, you know, their packaging they get from China. So that's been more expensive to get out of China with, again, the freight things we had last year, plus, as you said, wages. So I think, you know, it's not like this big event. It's these little things that start creeping in, which affect margin.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, that you talked about the building sector. There's been plenty of press around the building sector about how much, you know, wood's gone up and the core products have gone up. And I last week, I think it was, One News interviewed Master Builders, and they're expecting the building costs to go up by 10% this year. So, you know, there are certain sectors.
I'll be surprised if it's
correct. And their example was something like Jibboard. I think it was, you know, it's like a 3-month lead time. So there's, you know, there's more dollars. And one of the analogies of inflation is you've got more dollars chasing the same item. And I think that's a good example where we've had that ripple effect from from supply chain issues that have kind of were coming out through last year, particularly. But you've still got lots of money floating around that want to chase that. As you said, the demand, Greg, for your clients has not dropped, has it? You know, they're not, there's not jobs getting cancelled or anything like that. We're not in that stage.
No. And I also think, just briefly, let's just look at where inflation is or it's coming from. Definitely some is imported, but not the lot, you know. And so the imported inflation, you basically have to grin and bear it. There's no question in my mind that the New Zealand Reserve Bank overheated the economy to try and save COVID. And combining that with closing the borders created this false environment where we have a lot of cash, we have no workforce, and so we literally have this petri dish of a set amount of products and the cash chasing it. And I think we were talking before, Stu, there's a podcast we both follow is Planet Money, and they did one on inflation in World War II. And Franklin D. Roosevelt addressed it by, one of the things brought about was that all of a sudden the industries that were making cars stopped and started making tanks. So there was no one could buy a car, and all uniforms were going to the troops, so no one could buy clothes. I mean, women were actually drawing a line up the back of their leg to make it look like they had pantyhose on. But the other thing was women got majorly into the workforce. So the American government had a plan to soak up money. And they had to, and so they had war bonds and things like that. So they focus on this common enemy,
and they called it that, didn't they? War. Yeah, like they were like they had these national announcements. This is our common enemy, and it's not just
And we're all in this together. And they kept turning around, how can we soak up more money? Well, they did things that in today's society wouldn't be tolerated. Probably the last time anything like that was under the Muldoon era, when we had rampant inflation and we brought in a wage and price freeze, which I saw one political party mention that the other day. And if there's anything guaranteed to have an explosion of inflation, it is a wage and price freeze or rent freeze. But they literally created this false environment to put a cap on it. Now, we can't do that now, so let's leave it to the governments to try and sort out the macroeconomics. So I think we've got to start looking at in microeconomics in terms of my what business, my life.
What can I do? I think it's a good point, Greg. And I think what was really interesting, you know, when you – and I'll put the link in the show notes for the Planet Money episode, because it is fascinating, that cycle of reduced of certain products, but also the war created pretty much full employment. Like, there was lots of job opportunities to make sure that, you know, the war carried on. But the controls they did, and that was when they first introduced universal income tax for everyone, which no one ever, they didn't do that until the sort of the 40s, just to soak up the money. And it's a fascinating example of a obviously very unique event that has different ripple effects beyond the event. And I think that's in some ways what the pandemic has done, is a unique event in a lot of ways, but there is ripple effects from, as you said, Greg, of, you know, when we were sitting here, gosh, nearly 2 years ago now, isn't it? That it would have been 2 years ago, roughly, in about a month, you know, sitting there.
Yeah.
And obviously we all felt we were going to fall off a cliff and stuff. So you're right. The government, we obviously have things like the wage subsidy, those sort of things, support payments, but the economy was pumped for the funds, but then we did see a massive rebound in spending, and you know, we are still, as you sort of rightly said, Greg, in a very low interest rate environment. So the cost of borrowing, even though there's hikes, and we'll talk about a little bit in a minute, have gone up slightly, it's still, you know, historically extremely low to borrow money. You know, we're recording this on Tuesday, the 22nd of February, and tomorrow Reserve Bank are doing their quarterly update, and there is an expectation they are expected to hike again. And it's this sort of, I was looking at last night, and it's anywhere from 0.25 of a percentage point they're looking at increase, but some people are saying it could go up to 0.5. And I think this, compared to, you know, that the podcast we're referencing in World War II, interest rates weren't really a tool in the armory back then, because it wasn't, you know, the structure of the economy wasn't that way. Now, interest rates is the normal tool that people will use. It's the main lever people use to, you know, dampen down the inflationary tool. I think if interest rates start to, well, they will start to increase, and we're one of the first sort of Western countries to go that way, what do business owners need to start thinking about with that and the consequences of money becoming a little bit more expensive?
It's the funny thing about inflation. People with a lot of assets, the assets get devalued because inflation eats them up. And people with a lot of debt, the debt gets devalued because inflation eats it up. But then the flip side of the cash of that coin is people with a lot of debt, the cost of servicing it goes through the roof. And if you own an asset, there's no cost of servicing. So your cash flow is better protected. So, you know, at the end of the day, everything comes back to fundamentals, in my opinion. And I look at clients here and they go, you know, what do I do in terms of my business or in terms of my home life, in terms of cash flow and things like that? Well, you know, some people are still making a lot of money and still going out and buying the Range Rovers, etc., like that, and good on them. You know, I would hesitate to go and buy one on tick, but then my point would be I probably wouldn't do that even if times were good. So, you know, but that's individual choice. In terms of where a business should look, though, and this comes back to this false environment we're in. So interest rates go up. Normally that would be a dampener, but we're still in a hermit kingdom. We've still got the borders locked, so we don't have the ability to bring in a greater workforce to dampen the wage demands. We have businesses that can't, particularly in the horticultural region, they can't service their needs in terms of picking or whatever, and so they're paying silly money just to get anyone. So that's creating a false environment that the interest rate has no bearing on at all. And I feel that we really are in the perfect storm at the moment.
Yeah, and I think that the wage thing I think has had a huge impact on this, because I think you know, we know in our industry, Greg, of accounting, that there's a lot of demand and stuff around that aspect and wage pressure. But you know, every industry I've spoken to, whether it's construction, doesn't matter what size that construction, whether it's in other professional services, whether it's in some form of products or whatever, everyone is struggling with labor, like and the expectation that prices are increasing, and obviously inflation. It's like a self-fulfilling prophecy, because if cost of living is going up and there's plenty of press about it, people go, well, inflation's gone up 5% and I get a 3% pay rise, I'm actually worse off than I was. You know, like there's this kind of, it kind of self-fulfilling prophecy, I think, a little bit sometimes around inflation. So, but I think the wage pressure is a huge thing. And as you said, we've gone from, you know, a very dynamic, mobile workforce in the sense of people coming in, but the globe's that way as well. So we've kind of, the whole world globe's had to shift with this. But because we're a smaller country, we can't necessarily deal with it as well. Obviously, there's signs that we're, border will be opening, which is great, but labor is a huge part of this puzzle, and that's another podcast. But yeah, I think the fundamentals is a really good point. Let's talk about, Greg, I think margins, because this is the area where I think people can get caught out if they're not on top of it. And I think one point, I'll go back to your point, Greg, is there is this for a lot of people in the last, well, literally since 08, interest rates, all they've done is gone down. They've not done anything else since the 08 GFC, where we start to see really aggressive moves around interest rates. Now they're potentially going up. We've obviously got a lot of borrowing out there and all that sort of stuff. So I think it's really important that, you know, as you said, Greg, business owners can focus on what they can control. And what you can control is obviously your cost management, your fundamentals of your business, your margins and your pricing. So let's talk about margins. Like, we harp on this podcast about your margins. So let's, what are sort of the exercise of what are you trying to get your clients to think about when we're discussing margins?
So first of all, is know what your margins are.
Point one, know them. Yes.
And you'd be surprised at how many businesses don't recognize. So the first thing that is, what is a variable cost and what's a fixed cost? So, simple thing, I buy a widget, I sell a widget, the price of the widget is variable. I pay freight on that, and the freight's tied back to the amount of widgets I bring in, so it's variable. I pay wages. Well, wages are fixed until I get to a point where I'm selling so many more widgets that I've got to bring on another person. Or my sales are dropping so much that I've got to look at dropping the person off. So it's the pulse of your business. So understanding that, because when you go to see your accountant or financial advisor or anything else, they can talk at the high level about margins and everything else, but you need to know what your margins are. So you need to actually understand what your variable costs are. The second thing you need to understand is your timing. Are you paying for stock sooner than you should? And here we have a conflict. So you might say, the supply chain is so bad, I need to carry more stock so I can supply. There's a cost of holding that stock is a direct impact on your margin. So just in time versus just in case. And so then you've got to say, is how good is my supply chain? Recognizing whoever you've bought it from wants to get paid sooner than they would otherwise, because they are in the same pressures you're under. So once you kind of got a handle on that, and any good accountant should be able to guide their client through that exercise. It's not a technically difficult exercise, it's just one unique to each business. You've then got to look at and say, when I'm selling something, am I selling it because I want to create cash flow, or am I selling it because I want to create cash surplus? So cash flow, no margin. I've got all these widgets. I want to get them out the door. I'll give you an example. You might have a whole look at your inventory if you're in retail, and you might say, I've got all this stuff here that's dated. Even though I paid $10 a unit, it's been there for 8 months. It's cheaper for me to sell it at $8 a unit and convert it to cash. Okay. So, and then the last thing is look at who you're selling to. So if you are selling, and I've got an example here, I've got a client who does retail and wholesale in manufacturing. Their margins in their wholesale are getting continually squeezed. Yep. And their clients and wholesale clients are pushing out their payment terms. Their margins in their retail are holding up. They then also have the problems they cannot get trained staff. It's cut. They've been advertising. They'd normally try and get someone from Australia or the UK, can't get that. They found someone who would have been perfect, who was coming down from India, couldn't get them in, etc. So I've said to them, you are better to sell less at a higher margin, except that the staff level you've got is your defining unit. So I've got two staff plus myself. That's it. So if that's the case, who do I sell to? So, and they're going, oh, if I don't carry on selling to the wholesaler, or to the wholesale, they'll go elsewhere. And I said, well, so what? You know, we're talking about bottom line here. So if your turnover drops by 30%, but you maintain or increase your margin, you're actually making more profit for less work. And I don't see the downside of that at all.
I think that's a good point, though. In some ways, you said point one is know your margins, Greg. But point two is, as you said, depending on the number of distribution channels you have, and for most businesses, it only might be one. But I've got a client who's got three, and their margins between the different distribution channels, very similar. They've got a retail store. Then they've got two wholesale sort of levers. They go, one's to the supermarkets, one's to cafes. Different margins, but also different controllables, because trying to negotiate a price increase into your supermarkets, lots of hoops to jump, lots of pressure. There's lots of sort of other parameters you have within that with shelf space and all that kind of stuff. Whereas being able to negotiate that with some of your cafe owners, probably a little bit easier. So it's also picking off, okay, one, do I know my margins and what's my levers within each of my distribution channels? And then, as you said, going, okay, what's the one I need to maybe think about? Because I think it's a really interesting point you said there, Greg, is there's this, the mindset, okay, well, I've got more revenue, but more money doesn't necessarily mean more down the bottom necessarily. It could mean less potentially in certain ways. So I think that's really, really good point.
If you look at your inputs as well, like if you're a cafe, you say, well, I only sell retail. What do I do? Look at your menu. Are you making muffins that have a high cheese content that is a lower margin than dates that have a large? I've got some hospitality clients who have re-engineered their menus in restaurants. Still beautiful food, but they've re-engineered it to take out the high cost ingredients.
And I think, and I always, I don't know how we always go on this podcast, which Casey did with us about a year and a half ago on hospitality, and it was all about hospitality pricing and stuff. But I think this really goes back to, in case in that podcast, link will be below. One of the key things he talked about that in the hospitality sector, which is very much you can take into all other sectors, it's just a bit harder in hospitality. You've got to know your input costs into your muffin, into all your meals. And he was like, you've got to understand it. And I think that is a really good, message to when you're looking at inflation, because inflation is not going to be this, hammer that comes and just slams you in the face and you're like, oh yeah, now I've got to do something about it. It'll be suddenly that butter goes up 20% here, which on your weekly bill is not going to, I'm not saying you're not going to notice, but that's not much. But then suddenly your milk's gone up a little bit, and then your flour, and then your produce is gone. Before you know it, that meal that you serve that you cost you maybe $10 is now costing you $12, $13, and you're not aware of it. And you're like, where's my money going? and it will slowly just erode away without your knowledge. So I think, as you said, Greg, that input aspect of knowing all your costs, understanding, you know, have I got a really clear understanding of my freight costs? Do I understand how this is made up? What is the controllable levers in this? I think is kind of the fundamental starting point to feel, at least feel like you've got control of margin within your business.
Yeah, and the other thing is, I'm a strong advocate of business reengineering. I think the classic example is McDonald's, who used to go in there and kids left school or on holidays and they took your order for whatever you're buying. And the cost of minimum wage went up and up and up and youth rate went up. So they reengineered and no one takes your order now. You go in and there's a terminal. So they had a capital cost, which was fixed against an increase in variable cost. So again, it's the sort of thing going, if you are squeezed in terms of labor cost or labor availability, is that an option? I know it's been talked about quite extensively in the horticultural industry with picking apples, you know, robotic or that. Now, that might be at a scale that's not viable for a lot of small or medium businesses, but invariably there are things in your business you go, well, do we need to do it that way?
A really good example of that, actually, Greg, and they've only introduced, I think, in the last 2 to 3 months, but New Zealand company Tank, which you see in most malls and stuff, they do smoothies and salads and stuff. But it was, I think, and I'm not sure if they've done this nationwide, but I've seen it in a couple of their stores in Auckland, is, you know, used to, is, it was a pretty traditional, you go up, someone goes, what do you want? And you go, I want a banana smoothie, whatever it is. Now it is all screens. And you go and they've got two or three, depending on the size of the store. And it's really well done. It's really, you know, it's a really simple interface, really customer friendly. You go there, boom, and it, you put your order, and obviously it goes to the kitchen to make your food. But it's things like that, Greg, is it, you know, that one is probably, you know, do they need one less staff member now to have it on an average basis so that they, to deliver orders? Maybe. I don't know how, you know, I don't know the workings of it, but it is thinking of different ways of delivering your product, different ways of delivering your service, how you create your product or service and the process around that. Just 5% here or there of efficiency or just going, actually, we don't need human input there or whatever, can make a big difference to the overall margin for your business, can't it?
Yep. Absolutely. You know, and also look at the lines of selling. I was saying before, you know, I mean, what you are selling, there'll be something you go, I can sell those really well. I'm a builder and I'm doing these little mini renovations. And then you go, well, actually, by the time I drive to the site and do the job, am I actually making you know, money on it? I mean, you can't get a builder for love nor money. And, you know, the contract rate probably in the last 18 months gone from about $40 an hour to about $80 an hour. So it's 100%, you know, increase. But that still doesn't mean you're making money on that job.
Yeah, correct.
You know.
So look, we talked a little bit about thinking about costs, but Greg, what prices is the other part here, and that's, you know, what inflation is, price. And there is, you know, petrol stations, they just change it on the every day and that's your price and cool, that's easy. It's just like, well, I've got to fill my car up. Other industries it's a little harder, and there's more benchmarking, more competition. There is also fear around raising prices. What does that mean to, am I going to lose customers? Am I going to lose this quote or this tender, or depending what you're in? Or you're dealing with you're the small fish dealing with the big fish. I think the classic example I just used with one of my customers, they deal with supermarkets. So there is a lot more to, you know, going, cool, if I lose them, doesn't matter because they're a huge player. What is your advice for clients around price increases and how to view them and how to deal with them and work with them on? And again, it varies from industry, so, isn't it, a little bit.
So I the first question is your business a price setter or a price taker? So if you are dictated to what the market will pay, then you're a price taker, and it's a lot harder to push your margin. But even saying that, there's an interesting article. There's a company in New Zealand called Flight Coffee, and they make amazing, roast amazing coffee. And they're talking about the true cost of a cup of coffee, and that, you know, $5 is ridiculously cheap. But if people started charging $7 a cup of coffee,
it'd be outrage.
People would be outraged. Exactly. So part of it is what goes with the coffee. Yep. You know, do you do a special where, hey, a coffee and a muffin is $8, and people go, wow, that's cheap, but in fact the muffin cost you $1 to make, you know? So you're creating product mix that makes it non-comparable. Okay. Secondly, look at your value offer. You know, if you are literally, you know, a dirty coffee bar down the greasy coffee bar down the road, well, people would only go there because you happen to be the cheapest.
You're probably on route something.
I live on the Kapiti Coast, and there's a great drive-through coffee bar here. And what makes it great is their speed of delivering the coffee. You drive up, you order, and with less than 30 seconds, you have got your coffee, and you drive off. And I think it's $5 a cup. Well, people go, that's fine, you know.
Because I'm paying for the convenience, I'm paying for the speed, and just I'm getting in, I'm getting out, and that's,
exactly. And their overheads happen to be a semi-industrial area, so they're not paying high-end retail shop, things of that nature. So it does come back to when you are a price taker, probably won't say easy because nothing's easy about it, but if you can bundle your products and bundle your value proposition, for example, offering a warranty, offering post-sale service, fundamentally, if we were always just buying the cheapest, would we always just shop at the warehouse and nowhere else?
Yeah.
And we don't. And there's reasons behind that. So I think it just takes a deep breath and to step back and say, who is my customer? What are they looking for? And drive that way. But look, a small increase, even with a cup of coffee, if you're currently charging $4.50 and you think, I can't get five, charge $4.75. I mean, everyone pays electronically, well, virtually everyone, so it's not like you got to worry about change. But that 25 cents would not be material to the customer, but they make a major impact
on your margin.
On your margin.
And I think it's a good point, Greg, in the sense that I think it comes back to, if you know your cost of delivery, especially if you've got multiple products, you know, cafe's a good example. I know we talk about hospital, but it's, you know, you've got multiple meal combinations and stuff. You know, part of it might be, well, as you said, it might not be, I don't need a price increase. It might be actually, I'm going to slimline down. I'm getting rid of these three or four items, which are low margin. So that takes them out of mix. So it could be just that side of things. But if, say, you're in a maybe you sell bulk loads of products, or you're more in a, tender or something like that sort of process. Things that you may look at is, well, do I look at my price breaks depending on the quantity that people buy, if I'm a wholesaler or something like that? There's different ways of skinning a cat around pricing rather than just go, I'm going to slap 5% on everything. Make the pricing work. You may maintain your price, but you say, hey, to your customer, I can maintain the price, but I've got to have this amount of quantity, and you've got to order for the next 12 months. That, for some people, the certainty of a customer and cash flow and that supply from a customer is more important than just that short-term sugar rush of, I've increased my price, but actually, have I really done a best thing for me and my customer there? Where, you know, so I think when you're talking probably at a larger scale and you have contracts involved, having your margin understands obviously point one, but then point two, really think about what's your customer wanting here. They're probably wanting certainty as well around their pricing. They're probably wanting to know for the next 12 months or however long, that they've got a price point they can lock in. Well, if they want that certainty, what can you get out of that? Maybe it's a guaranteed quantity of sale over a period of time. So, you know, when you're into that sort of level of sales and conversation, think of the other levers you can pull, which work for the customer, but will also work for you, I think, as well.
Yep.
Yeah.
Agree. Totally agree. Yep.
All right, Greg, any final comments or points?
No, look, it's like a wave, you know, and we, excuse the background of the dog barking.
It's a bit of ambience to the podcast.
Ambience, I think, yeah, offering the intelligent opinion. It will come and go, okay? And so hunker down if you can. Don't go into a shell. Yeah. You know, be proactive, understand your business, where you can make cuts, make them. Once again, I think of every podcast I've been on, I've said cash is king, and it's still king, you know. But just be a smart business person and use your advisors.
Yeah, you know? Awesome. Awesome, Greg. Great to have you back on and speak to you soon. Thanks.
All right. See you later, soon. Bye.